It's Wednesday, August 16, 2017. I'm Albert Moeller, and this is The Briefing, a daily analysis of news and events from a Christian worldview. Today we're going to hear an influential figure in Scotland call upon the Scottish government to coerce churches to call women as pastors and priests. We're going to ask what it means that a marijuana company has bought an entire small California town, and we're going to find out in a story from the Washington Post that it is now documented that the use of marijuana among college students causes cognitive impairment. Just in recent days, an alarming story has come out of Scotland. The basis of the story comes down to this. The head of Scotland's National Arts Agency, a very prominent figure in the country, has called for religious groups to be forced by law to ordain women clergy. By law, by legal coercion. It turns out that in this case, Ben Thompson, the head of the National Arts Agency, has written an opinion which he forwarded when the Scottish government is now considering revising its laws on gender inclusivity and required diversity. His argument shocked people in Scotland and beyond, because his argument is that religious groups should not even be tolerated if they do not ordain women to senior positions of leadership. The focus of a lot of the conversation has been on what this would mean for Catholics and Muslims, but of course, it would also mean coercion by the state for evangelical churches that simply operate by a biblical understanding of the order of ministry. Articles dealing with Ben Thompson's comments appeared all over the media, even in newspapers such as the Times of London. But I had to wonder, could this be taken at face value? So I actually was able to find a copy of the document of Ben Thompson's advisory addressed to Leslie Cunningham, the Gender Equality Policy Department of the Equality Unit of the Scottish Government. He wrote in this advisory that he offered to the government, quote, "To be clear, I fully support board diversity in all forms, including gender diversity." He says his track record has proved it. But then he moved on to the truly alarming portion of his advice to the government when he wrote, quote, "If we are really serious about gender diversity, then in my opinion, we need to fight against legislation that condones it in parts of our society. If we are to really get a better diversity and fairer treatment of women in society," he wrote, "then we need to address the elephant in the room, that of sexual discrimination in religion. We would not tolerate murder, violence, racial discrimination, or sexual abuse in any religious organization, so why do we not only tolerate but legislate for gender discrimination?" End quote. Now, Thompson's comment there about the so-called elephant in the room is the fact that there are exclusionary allowances written into Scottish law concerning gender for religious organizations and churches. Thompson noted this when he wrote, quote, "All religious organizations are exempt from gender discrimination. Schedule 9 of the Equality Act 2010 specifically states that there is an exception for sex discrimination if," and here he italicizes the words, "the employment is for the purposes of an organized religion." He goes on to say, "Therefore, women are not afforded the same rights as men in the religious workplace." He continues, "There seems to be a huge focus by politicians and media on the importance of the number of women in cabinet or on corporate boards." But he says there's little attention given to the fact that there are no female Catholic priests. He writes, quote, "Most of the religions practiced in the United Kingdom to some extent discriminate on the basis of gender, and it's time we stop supporting this exemption in our legislation," end quote. As might be expected, Thompson's comments gained a good deal of attention and incited controversy. And we should be glad of that. But it's also interesting that in response to the controversy, an official spokesperson for the Scottish government responded with these words, quote, "Scotland is a forward-thinking country with equality at its very heart, and we do not tolerate prejudice in any form," end quote. Now, that's one of those statements made by a government spokesperson that says everything and nothing all at once. But what's most dangerous about it is that the speaker assumes that it must mean something, or at least that the public will accept that it means something. I repeat it because it's important. The spokesperson said, quote, "Scotland is a forward-thinking country with equality at its very heart," note the final words, "and we do not tolerate prejudice in any form," end quote. Well, the thing is, it's really clear that Scotland, in the form of its government, does take positions on many issues, and the alternatives to those positions, it does not tolerate. That's a form of prejudice. Every single intelligent person is making discriminations all the time in choosing the good, the better, the best, in making moral determinations. Anyone who is genuinely, totally non-discriminatory is a person who has no opinion about the difference between good and evil. Now, that's moral insanity, and at least we should be comforted by the fact that most people who say they do not discriminate in any way don't actually live by what they say, nor do they recognize the insanity of it. The discrimination and prejudice Christians should oppose would be discrimination and prejudice on the wrong bases or for the wrong reasons. That's very important for us to recognize. That's one of the reasons why, for example, racial prejudice is so contrary to the Scripture and should be so offensive to all Christians, as well as others. Where we find it offensive to others, we should celebrate it. Years ago, a prominent European philosopher wrote on tolerance, arguing that the only conception of tolerance that would really liberate humanity would be a conception of tolerance that would be intolerant of any position that was not totally tolerant. That's not just a play on words. It's a threat against anyone who is standing for, say, a traditional biblical understanding of morality, and in particular of sexual morality. But here you have a major figure in Scotland offering his own advice to the Scottish government, representing, in one way or another, the Scottish National Arts Agency, when he says that it's high time that the legislative provisions honoring religious liberty in Scotland should be scrapped because of the far higher priority of gender equality, even if this means, as he acknowledges, it will mean forcing churches to have women as pastors and priests. That's simply the price you're going to have to pay, he argues, if Scotland is really going to live up to its ideals of equality. And then you have a spokesperson for the Scottish government responding by affirming that equality, in the words of the spokesperson, is at the very heart of Scotland, and Scotland doesn't tolerate any form of prejudice for any reason. Of course, the Scottish government is going to have to respond one way or another to this proposal. It will either follow Ben Thompson's advice or it will reject it. If it follows it, it's going to be prejudiced towards accepting his argument. If it rejects it, well, it's going to be prejudiced against the moral argument he has made. Either way you look at it, there's no way that one can be tolerant of all positions and maintain any sanity, or for that matter, run a government. But here we see what is happening in the inevitable collision between the modern secular worldviews and religious liberty. If churches have to be coerced, Ben Thompson argues, in order to have women as preachers and priests, then let them be coerced. We cannot say we haven't been warned. Next, we turn back to the United States, where a story gained international attention when, as for example, the Daily Telegraph of London reported, quote, "One of the largest marijuana companies in the U.S. has bought a Californian desert town, promising to turn it into a cannabis-friendly resort. American Green Incorporated said it was buying all 80 acres of Nipton, which includes its Wild West-style hotel, houses, a travel park, and coffee shop." Later in the article, we read, quote, "The town's current residents number fewer than two dozen, and one of its major sources of revenue is the California lottery tickets the general store sells to people who cross the state line from Nevada, where they are unavailable," end quote. David Gwyther, American Green's president and chief executive, said, quote, "We are excited to lead the charge for a true green rush. The cannabis revolution that's going on here in the U.S. has the power to completely revitalize communities in the same way gold did during the 19th century. Indeed, we're told in the story, it was a gold rush that created Nipton in the early 1900s, end quote. By the way, just in economic terms, no one seems to notice that the gold rush was exactly that. It was a rush, a spectacular bubble that then collapsed. There's a reason Nipton now has only a few dozen residents. It's because the economy fell with the fall of the gold economy after the gold rush. The same thing is almost sure to happen when it comes to the green rush promised by American Green. This article at least tells us something about the ambitions behind this green rush of cannabis. But something else came up in terms of an article that was published as an opinion piece in USA Today. The author was Jeff Hunt, Vice President of Public Policy at Colorado Christian University. He points out that Senator Cory Booker, a Democrat of New Jersey, has announced he wants to introduce legislation known as the Marijuana Justice Act in an effort, it's explained, to legalize marijuana across the nation. Now, Hunt goes on to say, this is the furthest-reaching legalization effort to date and marks another sad moment in our nation's embrace of a drug that will have generational consequences. Now, it's important to recognize that Senator Booker's concern, and no doubt it's a deep moral concern behind his Marijuana Justice Act, is the fact that there is a disproportionate number of African Americans, and in particular, young African American men, who've been arrested for cannabis or marijuana-related crimes, and they have spent time in jail. And, of course, they've developed a criminal record. But Hunt argues in the USA Today piece that the actual result of Booker's legislation will not be what he hopes and intends. He points to the 2002 legalization of so-called recreational marijuana in the state of Colorado, and he writes, quote, since then, Colorado has seen an increase in marijuana-related traffic deaths, poison control calls, and emergency room visits. The marijuana black market has increased in Colorado, not decreased, and numerous state marijuana regulators have been indicted for corruption. He also points out that now, 4 years after the vote to legalize marijuana in Colorado, remember the premise was not only that recreational marijuana would be enjoyed, but that it would enrich the state in terms of its tax coffers. Even though Colorado may brag of the 156,700,000+ that was brought in 2016 in terms of the marijuana tax, the total tax revenue for the state was over $13 billion, as Hunt remarks, making marijuana only 1.18% of the state's tax revenue. It also turns out that records from the Colorado Department of Public Safety indicate that after legalization, the arrest rates for young African American and Latino citizens in Colorado increased 58% and 29% respectively. Recall that that's because Colorado didn't completely legalize marijuana. It intends as a state to regulate the sale. Otherwise, it will not be gaining that much vaunted tax revenue. Citizens of Colorado were told that legalizing marijuana would mean the minimization of the black market, but the opposite has been the actual result. But that leads us to another story having to do with marijuana. This one appeared in the Washington Post. The author of the piece is Keith Humphreys. Published on the 25th of July, Humphreys tells us in this article, quote, the most rigorous study yet of the effects of marijuana legalization has identified a disturbing result. College students with access to recreational cannabis on average earn worse grades and fail classes at a higher rate, end quote. Now, it's important in an article like this to source it. The source is the Washington Post. This is not an article that was published by some kind of Christian activist organization. This is a very liberal newspaper. It's the liberal newspaper, which is the most influential newspaper in the nation's capital. The Washington Post article then tells us about research undertaken by two economists. They were looking at the decision of Maastricht, a city in the Netherlands, to change the rules for cannabis cafes, which had legally sold recreational marijuana. Because Maastricht, writes Humphreys, is very close to the border of multiple European countries, including Belgium, France, and Germany, drug tourism was posing difficulties for the city, thus hoping to address it, the city barred non-citizens of the Netherlands from buying cannabis from the cafes. Then, says Humphreys, this policy change created an intriguing natural experiment at Maastricht University, because the students there from neighboring countries suddenly were unable to access legal pot while students in the Netherlands continued. They did research on more than 4,000 students, published in a peer-reviewed journal that is known as the Review of Economic Studies. And according to the report, they found that those who had lost access to legal marijuana showed substantial improvements in their grades. Specifically, writes Humphreys, those banned from cannabis cafes had a more than 5% increase in their odds of passing their courses. Low-performing students, he writes, benefited even more, which the researchers noted is particularly important because these students are at high risk of dropping out. Quote, the researchers attribute their results to the students who were denied legal access to marijuana being less likely to use it and to suffer cognitive impairments, for example, in concentration and memory, as a result, end quote. Now again, this is the Washington Post saying that these researchers, economists looking at the impact of a withdrawal of legal marijuana for a group of college students, found that there was a decrease in cognitive impairments. Now, what's most important there is the acknowledgement that with the use of marijuana comes cognitive impairments. Now, a Christian should just take very seriously those two words, cognitive impairments. At least a part of the stewardship of our own bodies given to us by God should mean that we should not seek cognitive impairments in concentration, in memory, or for that matter, in anything else. The last paragraph of the Washington Post article is very interesting in a very different way. Humphreys writes, quote, "Although this is the strongest study to date on how people are affected by marijuana legalization, no research can ultimately tell us whether legalization is a good or bad decision. That's a political question and not a scientific one." But he concludes, "What the Maastricht study can do is provide highly credible evidence that marijuana legalization will lead to decreased academic success, perhaps particularly so for struggling students, and that," he summarizes, "is a concern that both proponents and opponents of legalization should keep in mind," end quote. Now, let's not rush past that initial sentence in the paragraph. He said this is the strongest study to date on how people are affected by marijuana legalization, but then he says, oddly enough, quote, "no research can ultimately tell us whether legalization's a good or bad decision." He then states, "it's a political question and not a scientific one." The reason I draw attention to those words is that it's rather arbitrary to make this argument now, because many people, in terms of public policy, argue that science should be the determinative issue. But when it comes to marijuana, it turns out that some of the people who said science should rule are now saying, well, it's basically a political, not a scientific question. Remember that the Post article concludes in this last paragraph that what the study certainly does do is provide, quote, "highly credible evidence that marijuana legalization will lead to decreased academic success," end quote. For Christians, that can't be the only issue or even the ultimate issue, but it certainly is a legitimate issue. And we should take note that this was published in the Washington Post. Thanks for listening to The Briefing. For more information, go to my website at albertmohler.com. You can follow me on Twitter by going to twitter.com/Albert Mohler. For information on the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, go to sbts.edu. For information on Boyce College, just go to boycecollege.com. I'm speaking to you from Berlin, Germany, and I'll meet you again tomorrow for The Briefing.